So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe Ferrero Rocher je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,99 Euro. Außerdem Mionetto Prosecco Spumante Doc je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 5,99 Euro. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Stu does America.
Welcome to a very rare suitless episode of Stu Does America. I'm live at Glenn Beck's ranch here in Idaho. I had a great time visiting Glenn and doing the shows up here. So thanks so much for his hospitality and the 85,000 extra calories I've consumed since I've been here. So I appreciate that. By the way, you can go to YouTube, youtube.com/Stu Does America. If you want to get the visuals to my fatness, you can subscribe and see the bell. Hit the bell for notifications so you know when we go live or post something new. Jasmine Crockett merch is now live. Head to StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10. We want her running in 2028. That's what we want. And speaking of our girl, Jasmine, yeah, we've got some very exciting news about her political prospects coming up in this episode. Get excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. By the way, we're going to go over the latest on school choice and how it fits into the big, beautiful bill as well on today's program. We're going to start by doing the Malay miracle. I love this story. Every once in a while, you get a good story, right? Every once in a while, something goes right. Something good happens in the world, and I feel like maybe we should feature it here today. And it goes against a lot of the predictions that were thrown out there before Javier Milei, of course, the leader of Argentina, was elected. People warned about all the horrible things that could happen if he did get into office, because he's a guy, you know, he's famous for carrying around a chainsaw. Why? He's going to slash everything. He's going to cut everything with a chainsaw. He's going to cut every program. He's going to cut every agency. He's going to take Argentina back to some sort of sanity. And he's tried to implement those policies before he got elected. We got quotes like this. The election of the radical right-wing economist Javier Milei as president of Argentina would probably inflict further economic devastation and social chaos on the South American country. A group of more than 100 leading economists has warned. Has any of them apologized yet? We'll see, maybe. The letter said Milei's proposals, while presented as a radical departure from traditional economic thinking, were actually rooted in laissez-faire economics. No! And fraught with risks that make them potentially very harmful for the Argentine economy and the Argentine people. The economists warned that a major reduction in government spending would increase already high levels of poverty and inequality and could result in significantly increased social tensions and conflict. The whole world's going to melt down, basically. Javier Milei's dollarization and fiscal austerity proposals overlook the complexities of modern economies, ignore lessons from historical crises, and open the door for accentuating already severe inequalities. Wow, that sounds terrible. And I'm calling it a miracle. What kind of crazy person would do such a thing? Well, a crazy person who, number one, isn't afraid of people and the ways that they spend their own money and their own economic habits. Maybe we should give them more control of their lives, not less. But also a person who's does have the benefit of hindsight. I will say when Milei was talked about going in there, and until he started kind of popping up on the scene where with his interviews and the things that he was saying, which were very bombastic and like proud of being a free market economist. I didn't know who he was. You know, I heard about him maybe a few years before he was elected and really liked what he was saying, but you never know, right? Like, you don't know when someone like that gets a job as a president or some sort of leader, if they will stick to what they were saying before, if they are flawed in some personal way, who knows? They could be very corrupt, or they could just be, you know, people who, you know, who say the right things on podcasts and then don't wind up doing the job when they're in there. Are they going to be able to implement these rules? Are they going to be able to actually do it? Will they have the balls to do it? Frankly, we hear quite a bit from politicians who are going to cut this and cut that. All these departments are going to go away. I mean, you know, I love Ronald Reagan. I'm a huge fan of Reagan, and I'm not one of the new people on the new right who think that his legacy is diminished in any way. I think he was fantastic. But he didn't get all the things done that he said he would. You know, I mean, he talked about getting rid of the Department of Education. Trump talked about it as well. Still there, right? We will see. Maybe Trump will succeed on that one, but it's still there. There's a lot of things that that I would have loved to have seen done that have not yet been done. Usually, they either underperform their promise, or you just, you know, they get mired in other crap, right? It's hard as a president. you're always being attacked. And you know, if, especially if you do have some weaknesses, as you know, someone like a Bill Clinton has found out in the past, it winds up derailing your presidency. So I don't know. I was worried that Malay might get in. Maybe he didn't stick to what he was going to say. And then this would be used against free market economics as, oh, look at this, it failed. Well, we don't have to worry about that, at least not yet. The Malay miracle is a vindication of free markets, writes National Review. Let me give you some of the stats. This is where they are right now. Remember, this is the reason people don't just turn to the free markets, right? People are usually a little bit more freaked out about everything, right? Especially in countries that have had a tradition of massively oversized government. In the United States, sometimes we kind of fall back on that, but oftentimes even here we don't. In Argentina, things really had to be screwed up for Milei to get elected. To be clear, it wasn't like one of these things where like, ah, you know what, let's try this. Things are going pretty well, but I think we could do slightly better. No, the country was a complete and utter crap show when he got elected. And it's the only reason he was elected. People were desperate because it was so bad for so long. But now things have totally changed. Argentina's economy is growing at 7.7%, according to the latest year-over-year data. Grew by 1.9% in April, the most recent month for which data are available. The Chinese economy is growing at a rate of about 5% per year, if you believe the official statistics, which there are good reasons not to. I mean, that's been the thing with China, is they've always promoted these massive growth rates. And, you know, you look at, you get under the hood a little bit, you realize they're probably not even true. But even the fakey China numbers are below where Argentina is. That's a massive improvement from where they were. Argentina is achieving this growth not by strategic industrial policy or mercantilist trade policy. It is achieving it by rolling back the over-indexed public sector, slashing the government budget, controlling the money supply, and removing price controls. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to be doing. That's what you're supposed to be doing as president. Those are great things. And, you know, I am a free trade type. That is part of this. They've done a lot of free trade type policies in Argentina. And, you know, those are kind of, you know, I know, for example, Donald Trump, of course, more of a tariff guy than certainly I am or Malay is. That has been part of it. But a lot of this is the stuff that typical Republicans promise all the time. We're going to cut this, we're going to cut that, and rarely ever do. And when they do it, we don't typically even notice that it's going on. We'll have more on that here in a second as well. Let me go on with more on the Malay miracle from National Review. Malay eliminated rent controls in Buenos Aires, and the apartment market was flooded with new properties. The average real price went down. He turned a budget deficit into a surplus his first year in office. He eliminated half of the country's cabinet departments. I mean, that's incredible, right? Like, half of the cabinet departments? Unreal. But let me focus on the rent control thing for a second, because we are in the middle of a time where our biggest city, the financial center of the world, is about to face an election where Zoran Mamdani is running and promising the exact same rent controls they had to reverse in Argentina. And that is terrifying, honestly, for our country, for the, certainly for the people of the city, but also for the rest of the country, because, you know, New York does drive a lot of our economic activity, not just here, but really around the globe. That is a really bad, bad, bad idea. Hopefully he doesn't win, doesn't go through with it. And there's good evidence to think that he is the favorite right now, but I wouldn't say it's impossible. You really just need some coalition to build on the other side that is going to say, okay, our answer is Adams. Our answer is, God forbid, Cuomo. Our answer is Curtis Sliwa, which would be the best of the options, but probably the least likely, unfortunately. If that all happened, you might have a chance. Right now, it's going to be very difficult to defeat him. Anyway, more on Malay. When Malay took office in December 2023, inflation was 25% per month. Per month. In May, it was 1.5%. The initial shock of the policy change led to a spike in the poverty rate. This was bragged about by everybody in the left-wing media. They were like, oh, here it is. The poverty rate's gone up. But it has been falling since the second half of last year and is now lower than when Malay became president. What an incredible development. That is an incredible development. And it was promised. I mean, we were promised the opposite over and over and over and over again. Malay knows that these are not miracles. They may feel miraculous for people who have been suffering, but they are exactly what economic principles suggest would happen when government controls are removed and people are made free to buy, sell, produce, and consume as they see fit. People have known about this since at least the time of Adam Smith, yet they continue to be surprised when it works. I mean, I keep tying this back to New York. and, you know, I don't mean to, but New York City has had multiple periods of success recently, the last 20, 30, 40 years. You know, certainly the Giuliani era was successful. I think you could argue the Bloomberg section of time was roughly, you know, pretty rough. You know, again, a lot of things I didn't like about Bloomberg's term, but, you know, the city did pretty well then. When did they do badly? David Dinkins, who is to the right, I would say, of Mamdani, but still way, way, way left. And Bill de Blasio, again, a person who's basically a socialist, who is trying to run the city. The new people of New York saw that and didn't like it. They had rejected it. They wanted to go a different direction. He was incredibly unpopular. Mamdani said his favorite mayor in his lifetime was de Blasio. He literally was tweeting for communism to take place in New York City. And when I say that, he said something like, this is the type of mayor we need in New York. And it was a communist mayor of another country. Who's also like 21 years old. Yeah, I'm sure that what New York needs is a 21-year-old communist running it. Idiots. Instead, they're going to get like a 35-year-old communist. Totally different. So that is the basic picture. It's not just that, though. We also have this piece from No Opinion. It is free market economics is working surprisingly well. This is an interesting piece because it comes from a guy who was pretty skeptical. Noah Smith, who was skeptical that this would work, was kind of skeptical of Malay before he came into office and skeptical of free market economics generically in the past. He says Argentina's longstanding economic model created by dictator Juan Perón in the 1950s involved a large and complex array of public works projects and subsidies for various consumer goods like energy and transportation. Malay slashed many of these, as well as cutting pensions, civil service employment, and transfers to provinces. Overall, think of this for a second. Think of what I'm about to say. We just did a bill, the big, beautiful bill. It seemed radical. What do? We kept the tax rates the same and increased spending, right? That was our big, beautiful bill on the Republican side that was so radical. We couldn't believe it. Oh, gosh, we cut a little bit out of Medicaid if you're an able-bodied worker in the prime work age and you don't have small children, you have to work part-time. That was our radical proposal. Malay cut government spending by 31% in a year. In a year, 31%. It resulted in a near total elimination of Argentina's chronic budget deficit. Let me give you that chart. Here it is. This is their budget deficit chart over the past. Chartapalooza, conservanerds unite. We've got charts for you. You see a deficit around 3.5% to 4.5% of GDP, just ongoing month after month after month after month. And then Malay gets elected and immediately it basically drops to zero. And that was as far as this summer. So it is essentially no deficit whatsoever. We mentioned inflation. Inflation was really, really high in Argentina. It was a really, really big problem. Here is a monthly chart of these inflation rates. And again, think of this monthly. You know, 2.4 looks like a good rate, which is where it is now. It's been stable the entire time, basically, after that initial period, first couple of months in office, and it's been stable, very low. I mean, 2.4% is still, for us, would be horrific, right? Like, that's 2.4% per month. So you're in the 20s for per year, which is how we think about it. We think 2.4% per year is, you know, okay to maybe a tad high. This is 2.4% per month, but it used to be 12.5% per month. You see some months back there where it was 25% per month. Horrible. He's completely fixed this problem in a calendar year. It's incredible. Now, one thing that's interesting about this is the people, he's a bit a divisive figure. You know, he has that in common with Trump. Some of the economic stuff he has in common with Trump, but they're definitely different policy animals. But when it comes to his divisiveness, he's loud, he's bombastic, he likes to do stunts. He has a lot of that type of stuff that's similar to Donald Trump. And for that reason, he's still, even with all the success, somewhat of a divisive figure. Now, normally what happens when you become a new leader of a country is you have this sort of peak and it kind of comes down and, you know, your approval rating sort of goes down almost no matter what. I mean, we've seen this with at least every president in recent memory, going back at the very least to George W. Bush. And Bush had an opposite sort of chart because of 9/11. It's kind of hard to put that in there. But Obama started high, kept himself lower. Trump started high for him, came down lower, was pretty consistent in the low 40s for his first term. You go to Biden, same thing, started in the high 50s, came down to low 40s. Trump has had a similar thing. He kind of started off with a little bit of a honeymoon period. It has come down. It's still better than his first term, we should note, and has not fallen off of a cliff. It's been pretty consistent and better than his first term. Malay has really not had a drop off. He's basically been flat the entire time. Here's what the chart looks like. He's right around 45% right now. Actually, 47. Malay's approval and disapproval ratings stood at 44% last month, when nearly 12% of respondents were unsure about the libertarian leader. A monthly poll by Atlas Intel or Bloomberg for Bloomberg News said, with tumbling inflation amid a stable currency, Malay also maintained the highest positive image of all major Argentine political leaders at 47%. Okay, so you have that going on. We also have this piece from Newsweek, which is really interesting. Argentina's Javier Milei keeps proving his critics wrong. One other illustration of this housing policy is in here. I wanted to bring to you Zonaprop, which is one of Argentina's largest real estate platforms. They went through, they did all this, all this deregulation. They did all of the rent control reversals, all those things. This particular service had 5,500 traditional rental listings before he did this deregulation. Now there are over 15,300, a 180% increase in supply, a third of that rise happening in just the first month after deregulation. This stuff works, boys and girls. This is not some little meme that we've come up with. It's not just some thing we're doing on the right. This is actually successful policy, and we should try to replicate it if it's all at all possible. And what's interesting is we have bits and pieces of this going on in the United States, and a lot of times we miss it. I want to draw your attention to Virginia. This is going on right now in Virginia. And Forbes has a story about this, and Glenn Youngkin, what he has been up to. And this is really interesting because you haven't heard much of this anywhere. But while, you know, there's been some high profile stuff Youngkin's worked on, mainly in education and with, you know, girls and boys sports teams and all that. This is another thing that's going on in Virginia. He kind of is plodding away, doing things that are conservative economic policy that are working. The strategy has improved or produced concrete results for Youngkin. For instance, reforms to Virginia's building code lowered the cost of constructing new homes by over $24,000. This single change is expected to save Virginia homebuyers $723 million per year. Faster licensing at the Department of Professional and Occupational Regulation has cut approval times from 33 days to just 5, yielding $179 million annually in additional worker earnings. Updates to stormwater permitting processes have produced another $124 million in savings, while a new Virginia Marine Resources Commission's general permit framework reduced costs by $47 million. None of those things are sexy, okay? You know, there are very few shows you will hear about them. Only nerd shows like this will ever bring any of this crap up. I mean, licensing procedure, it's a, you know, not exactly going to win me any ratings races. Okay, I get that. But these are important things that actually conservative leaders can focus on and do. And honestly, maybe not cause massive controversies that cause them to be on Twitter defending themselves all the time. They can just do them. And they're sane. And they work. And they make everything better. Why not pursue that? A little bit more on Virginia. These reforms, which have been supported by an updated cost-benefit analysis framework, have reduced costs but also improved policy delivery. A new Virginia permit transparency portal, launched in 2024, tracks over 100,000 permits issued annually, enabling agencies and the public to monitor applications. Since its implementation, the Department of Environmental Quality has slashed average processing times by 70%. Think of all the hassles. Look at what's happening right now in California, where they're trying to rebuild from these fires. People can't get anything done. Celebrities can't get approvals for the permits to rebuild their houses. I mean, I think if anything, they'd care about the celebrities. They don't even care about them anymore. That's the Gavin Newsom of the future, who, by the way, was inexplicably in South Carolina this week, because that makes tons and tons of sense for anyone not running for president. Anyway, these are actual approaches, things you can actually do. They might not get everybody excited, but they're actually good for people. They improve their lives, and that is vitally important and something that we can actually focus on going forward. We can do the splashy stuff. I am 100% behind making sure that men are not dominating women's sports. We can do all that stuff, but make sure we're doing the other stuff in the background. Make sure we're moving the needle in the background. You want to talk about stuff that's popular on Twitter? Fine. Have all the battles you want to have on Twitter. Do all that stuff. In fact, do it and use it as a distraction while you're churning away at actual policy in the background. That is a really good combination of, you know, the sort of Trumpist instincts and this sort of new social media excitement. And on top of that, old school conservatism that just kind of plugs away and boringly makes the world better. Both of those things combined might be a winning formula, and maybe that's something we can put into place as we move forward in the future. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a second. Ah, summer. Longer days, brighter skies, and more chances to get outside and soak it all in. Whether you're out on a walk, you're running errands, or just catching some rays, you need something that can go the distance with you. And that's where Raycon's everyday earbuds come in. Crystal clear sound for music, podcasts, and calls. They keep you up to date with the best technology, and you never miss a beat. These earbuds are the perfect accessory. Whether you're hitting the gym or busy with work or taking phone calls, offering premium audio, you're going to love it. They already have tens of thousands of five-star reviews online. Their latest model is better than ever. I have it. It's great. It comes with a 32-hour battery life and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. It's a great feature, by the way. Like if you're like me, sometimes I'll be listening to a podcast on my phone, or I've got my Raycons in, and I'm also working on my laptop, and then a clip comes up, like I'm on, you know, maybe I'm on Twitter, I'm looking for the latest controversy, and I'm on Twitter and I want to listen to the audio there. I don't have to like disconnect, reconnect Bluetooth. It's like already connected to both, and I hit play on this one. I can just, that's the one that I hear. It's a really good feature. And like, I don't remember that even being the case back in the day. I remember that being a real hassle. They come with active noise cancellation, which is great. I'm on a flight later tonight. We'll be using that out for sure. They're available in a variety of colors. I know I have a pair like a navy blue and a black, and there's all sorts of great colors. Raycons start at just half the price of other premium audio brands, and the return policy is super easy as well. 30-day happiness guarantee, simple returns, all sorts of great stuff. So go to buyraycon.com/stew. Get 15% off right now. Raycon's best-selling everyday earbuds. Right now, Raycon is offering 15% off those earbuds at buyraycon.com/stew. BuyRayCon.com/stew. It's buyraycon.com/stew.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
Now here I am in Glenn's palatial ranch, slaving away for you. Every day, trying to bring you the things that you care about, things that are important to you. And what do I get out of the situation? Almost nothing at all. Very rarely any fun. I never get a fun story that I like to tell you. I mean, the Malay thing was cool and everything, but you know, nerd city. Where's the enjoyment? Where's the spectacle in my life? And then I was just about to, you know, jump off of one of these mountains and end it all. And then I got some news. Now, this is about the Texas Democratic primary for Senate. And you might think that doesn't sound interesting at all, Stu. And that's usually true. And they have a new poll out, which tells me a little bit about who might be running. And none of these people have announced yet. We're not quite to that level. But it's in 2026. And of course, they're going to try to take out the Republican. Now, the Republican side is interesting as well. It's John Cornyn, who, you know, frankly, kind of sucks. should not be the senator from a state like Texas. You know, if he was senator for Maine, I'd probably be fine with it. But Texas, come on, it's ridiculous. He's way too moderate and establishment for that. We should have somebody better. Dan Patrick is it Dan Patrick or it's the attorney general running against him, who is going to be would be much more exciting and interesting as a candidate for sure. So that's all going on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, though, we don't know who it's going to be yet. And the new poll has come out and it's asked the question, hey, who would you vote for in the Republican or the Democratic Senate primary? In fourth place is Julian Castro at 13%. Borefest. Now, you put this up, but it's still it's going to give away my big build up here. But Joaquin Castro at 13%, Beto O'Rourke at 13%, Colin Allred at 20%, and my girl, Jasmine Crockett, killing it. 35%. She's in first place. This must happen. I demand it. I demand Jasmine Crockett is the candidate here in Texas. It would be so much fun. And it would raise her profile even more than it already is. She'd be on TV blabbing her mouth all the time. Constant contact for content for this program. I can't wait. So Jasmine Crockett, by the way, we do have the T-shirts. This would be a great stepping stone to her 2028 presidential run. I'm just saying it right now. Jasmine Crockett, 28. For the Democratic nomination so that she can get lose terribly is really my outlook there. But studiosmerch.com is a place to go to get that. Okay, a couple other stories. Zoran Mamdani is leading a poll in New York City for mayor. This is pretty interesting. Mamdani's at 35%. And how do you beat Mamdani? Well, you need to have basically everybody else kind of come together, or at least two of these candidates to challenge. The reason why Cuomo is stuck in the race, number one, is he bought a line. You know, he basically paid for a line on the ballot. So he's already on the ballot, even though he lost the primary. But he keeps seeing polls like this. Cuomo's at 25%. Curtis Sliwa, the Republican, at 14. And Eric Adams, who is the current mayor, at only 11. The issue here is he's at minus 34 when it comes to approval, and people just don't like him. There are seemingly more anybody but Adams voters than anybody but Cuomo voters. So Cuomo might be the only thing that can stop Mamdani, who's legitimately terrible. But AndrewCuomoIsAwful.com as well. By the way, he spent millions of dollars on his legal defense against his Me Too accusers. Guess who's paid for it? The same people he wants to vote for him now, taxpayers of New York. Amazing. Back in a second.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Horrible news for Donald Trump today. Honestly, probably the most devastating thing that's ever happened to his political career. John Kerry thinks he's right. I mean, I assume his approval rating's down to like 5% now. No, actually, he's actually right on this one. He says, this is his comments. The first thing that any president should say is that, or anybody in public life, is without a border protected, you don't have a nation, Kerry said. I wish President Biden had been heard more often saying, I'm going to enforce the law. Well, and then he said, Trump was right. The problem is we all should have been right. Well, I mean, he's, of course, correct on that. The problem is that Biden didn't want to enforce the law. He wanted to do the exact opposite, ran on that, implemented it for 3.5 years until it got too close to the election. And then he was like, let's put all the Trump policies back in and see what happens. So that's what happened there. But credit to John Kerry there for that. We also have some new legislation in New York they're looking to pass. It's called the Melt Act. Get it? Because of ice. They're melting the ice. Now, this is not something that is going to change immigration law. It's going to hopefully, if the plan works to perfection, get some ICE members harassed at their homes and maybe even hurt or killed. That'll be great because that's obviously the goal of New York City lawmakers here. They don't like that ICE workers, when they're doing these raids, are wearing masks. Now, of course, the reason they're wearing masks is probably partially, at least, because they know if they get filmed doing their job, all the people on the left will harass them and their families. So they're trying to say, hey, like, we're not doing anything illegal, but we're going to make sure we mask up so that people don't know our identities and can kill us on social media or maybe in real life. Secondarily, wasn't it the Democrats that wanted us to wear masks all this time? I thought, like, I mean, Taylor Lorenz is still telling us to do it. And now these poor people are going to catch COVID or something. So that's going on. And finally, we have 31 workers scrambling to safety after an L.A. tunnel collapse. Very scary evening. A terrible story and a scary story. I bring this up mainly because it is almost literally the plot from the documentary from 1996 called Daylight with Sylvester Stallone. Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, now we're to the point where these documentaries are coming true. Sly got out of it, and it looks like these workers did as well. So some good news on that front. We have some other good news, some big news today. We'll get to here in just a second. This entire show has been almost all good news today. Has anyone noticed that? I mean, get optimistic here. And how about some good news for you? What if you're worried about, you're maybe a little tired of diets that leave you hungry and frustrated? Well, there is an easier and smarter way to lose weight. It's called Lean. It's a doctor-formulated supplement designed to help you shed pounds without extreme diets or constant hunger. Lean uses powerful natural ingredients, including an edible cactus from India. I don't know what the heck it's... They gave me the name one point. I'm like, I don't know what that is, but it helps naturally control your appetite, manage cravings, and support healthy blood sugar levels. It even helps turn your stored fat into energy, which is, of course, great. I have some stored fat, I've noticed. I'm doing that in like... I'm more like a squirrel. I'm just putting it away in case I need it. Forget unrealistic plans or gimmicks. Lean offers practical weight loss that fits easily into your daily life. If you're ready to lose weight the smarter way, get started today. 20% off by using the promo code STU20 at TakeLean.com. The code is STU20 at TakeLean.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease and is not a substitute or alternative for care from a healthcare provider.
You know, yesterday we went, I think it was yesterday, we went through a list of all of the protests slash riots that have happened since, you know, Donald Trump came down the escalator. And man, it was a lot of them. I mean, it was, you forget about several of them as you go through time. It just seems like these guys are on the streets all the time. Do they have jobs? I have no idea. But they're on the streets all the time. They're constantly burning our cities to the ground. We saw this happen, of course, most recently in Los Angeles. But that's not the end of this. L.A. is not the end of this. We expect this to grow like crazy. One of the things we're going to see, the left is planning to rise up all across the country on June 14th, only 2 days away from where we are right now. They call it a nationwide a day of defiance. So who's behind this? Corey DeAngelis has an answer to that. He's a senior fellow for the American Culture Project, economic research visiting fellow for the American Institute, and author of The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from the Radicals Ruining Our Schools. Corey, thanks for coming back on the program, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, Stu, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you tweeted something pretty interesting about what we're about to see in a couple of days. I don't know that, I mean, look, we all know progressive groups are going to get involved in rallies like this. But you had a name that... everybody should remember.
Yeah, it's Randy Weingarten's behind these over 1,000 protests all across the country starting on Saturday, June 14th, which also happens to be Trump's birthday, Flag Day, and the 250th anniversary of the Army. And Randy Weingarten just this week held a town hall getting all the troops mobilized to get people fired up to go protest in the streets. You remember 2020, they had the Summer of Love where it was fiery but mostly peaceful protests. I predict a Summer of Love 2.0 coming on Saturday. They have over 1,000 of these riots planned. And in their planning meeting, Randy Weingarten's co-host called to replicate LA, to basically, they said, to quote unquote, stand in solidarity with Los Angeles. So imagine Los Angeles happening all across the country, which this raises the question, why in the hell are the teachers unions behind this? Well, first of all, they're political activists. They care more about politicizing education than teaching your kids the basics, math, reading, and writing. They don't just want to inject the politics into the classroom, though. They want to take over the entire country, cause chaos in the streets. And so this shows that they're not about educating. They're a political animal, the entire teachers union industry. 99% of their campaign contributions go to Democrats each election cycle. It's a money laundering operation. But Stu, it's actually worse than that, because with this illegal immigration issue, they know that if there's deportations, if we stop the influence illegal immigration, that will hurt their bottom line, because public schools are funded based on the number of students there, their enrollment numbers. If you have fewer illegal immigrants in the schools, they are going to lose a ton of money. And the teachers unions, people like Randy Weingarten, who make over $500,000 a year, they're going to be hurt as well financially. And guess what? They get more money per student if they have a non-English language speaking student in so many states across the country. So they get a bonus if it's an illegal immigrant that doesn't know English. They get even more money than the average amount. So now it all kind of makes sense as to why the teachers unions would be behind this. But you would have thought they'd learn something after they stepped on a rake during COVID, showed families all the corruption in the classroom, the rot in the government school system through Zoom school. Conservatives are pissed. Now we've had 17 states past universal school choice, New Hampshire going all in, being the most recent this week. And so you'd think they would have learned, but now they're taking it a step further. They're over here like, hold my beer, unions of 2020. We're going to continue showing you just who we really are. I don't think they can reverse course. They've been so drunk on power for so long.
Yeah, you know, it is really interesting because, you know, of course, to the average person, the teachers unions, they might not follow these stories like you do. And they think to themselves, well, these are people trying to educate my kids. They might be a little bit on the left. I mean, that's not a huge surprise, I suppose, in public life these days. But like this, getting behind an effort like this, this is something that is far. These are most of the groups that are working into this are hardcore, you know, left wing socialist groups. You know, hardcore climate activists, you know, the Peace and Freedom Party. I mean, we're talking about groups that are kind of way out of the mainstream of America. And then, like, in the middle of this are the teachers unions. I mean, do the average American people even have any idea that this is going on?
They don't. I'm really happy we have social media and, you know, people like myself, to be quite honest, looking into these things, because people have their everyday jobs. They have a lot of other things to do. Right. People have their kids to raise. People have their 9-to-5 work hours. And so I'm glad that I can share this information on social media, have people like you amplify it even further on your networks outside the mainstream media, to be able to just educate the rest of the population. Because yeah, most people think teachers unions and they think teachers, and they think, you know, they might have friends or family members who are teachers, but the teachers union is not synonymous with the rank and file members of the who work in the schools. There are a lot of great public school educators out there, and the unions, people like Randy Weingarten, they're hurting the teachers more than anybody else, because they're not only trapping kids in failing government schools, but they're making the profession look bad. I mean, they're locked arms with this individual project fighting for these nationwide protests. The Indivisible Project is the person who co-hosted that rally with Randy Weingarten this week, calling for mass resistance and mass protests. And they're funded by George Soros. I mean, they're far left radical activists who want to uproot this entire country. They want to turn it on its head. They want to have chaos in the streets so that they can have their Marxism infiltrate even more institutions. This is why they fight against school choice too, because they want to have a monopoly on the minds of your children. And when they fight for all these ridiculous policies, they don't just make the profession look bad. They also fight for more dues paying members. They fight for more staffing and administrative bloat over time, which means more of a bottom line for Randy Weingarten to push for more of a political pet projects and pad her own pockets, but it means less money for teachers. So if you look over time since 1970, although we've increased funding overall for public schools by 170%, even after adjusting for inflation, the teachers aren't seeing the money. They've only increased teacher salaries by 3% over that period. So, I mean, they have their priorities all messed up, not just on what they're focusing on in the classrooms and what they're doing outside of the classroom, but even, you know, they're not focused on the kids. We knew that, but they're not focused on the teachers either.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. It's good work if you can get it, I suppose, for Randy Weingarten. For people who might know the name Randy Weingarten from COVID, remembering her as a negative figure through that time, can you kind of give who she is? I know you watch what she does closely. It's, you know, it's part of your gig, your lot in life at this point, although I'm sure she has you blocked on Twitter. Can you kind of remind people who Randy Weingarten actually is?
Yeah, she hasn't blocked me yet, but the National Education Association has, Becky Pringle's union. That's the main largest union in the country, largest labor union. They have a federal charter, which that needs to be revoked. They should not have the backing of Congress. It makes zero sense. But Randy Weingarten does close all of her replies on Twitter, like she closed the schools. Her and Becky Pringle's union, they lobbied the CDC to make it more difficult to reopen schools during COVID. They said it was about safety. It had nothing to do with safety. The private schools were open. Grocery stores were open. Bars were open. Everything else was open. Daycares were open. They were even closing some schools in some places, but then they'd have the daycares open. In one place in California, there was actually a private school that rebranded as a daycare just so that they could serve the needs of their customers, even though they were still a school. But the public schools fought to remain closed. People like Randy Weingarten knew they could profit from doing that too, because they could use that as leverage and say, well, we'll open if you give us even more money. They've received $190 billion in so-called COVID relief since March of 2020. They didn't use that money for reopening schools. They used it for hiring more members, which again meant more dues, which then they could funnel back to their buddies in the Democrat Party. I mean, it's an incestuous relationship. The Democrat Party is basically a wholly owned subsidiary, the teachers unions at this point. And this is the only reason why you have Democrats voting against school choice. It's a nonpartisan issue. I mean, you have Democrats, Republicans, Independents. They want to choose their school. They don't want their kids trapped in these failure factories that we call public schools. If you look at who uses school choice programs, Democrats overwhelmingly use it, support it. You look at polling, supermajority support across party lines. It just so happens that the elected officials on the Democrat side, they receive so many endorsements and political contributions. You look at the New Jersey governor's race that just happened. I just flipped through the headlines yesterday. The teachers union boss out there, the New Jersey Education Association, he received $20 million from his own union, indirectly through a PAC, but he still came like in last place with 10% of the vote. But it just shows you that they funnel so much of this money that in a way it's almost extorted from the taxpayer, because we have to pay for the public education system, and teachers unions feel like they have to pay the dues or else they'll get bullied at school, or, you know, in some places they feel like they need that liability insurance, even if they disagree with the unions politically and everything that they're doing in the streets. And that money gets funneled to the unions, their political projects, and ultimately to the Democrat Party. Mm-hmm. And so I think the Republicans have finally woken up on this issue and said, you know what, we need to lead on this issue because we're on the right side of history. And now 17 red states, including our home state of Texas, going all in on school choice. There's still more work to be done, even in Texas, but there's just been so much momentum. The wind is at our backs, and we got to thank Randy Weingarten. She stepped on a rake. She overplayed her hand. She showed everybody what kind of lunatics are running the union. Do you want people like her raising your kids or educating your child at school? No, it's free advertising for homeschooling, and it's also free advertising for school choice. This is why I dedicated my book to Randy, for overplaying her hand and awakening a sleeping giant. The parents who have started a revolution, a peaceful one, all across the country, just reclaiming the education of their child, saying, hey, that money's meant for my kid, not for you, not for the adults. The education system's supposed to be for the child, not the teachers, not the employees, not Randy Weingarten. And so the money should follow the child, which, you know, that leads to competition. It leads to the public schools doing a better job, focusing more on the basics. It's a win-win solution. And it's a beautiful sight to see. We've come so long, so far in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, and it is really legitimately true. Without Randy Weingarten, this wouldn't have happened. I mean, I remember, you know, conservatives and libertarians talking about this policy for decades and really getting nowhere on school choice. And until your efforts, Corey, you're very important in this as well. But got the assist from Randy Weingarten. Hopefully she's not as successful with these protests this weekend. Corey DeAngelis, be sure to grab a copy of his book. It's called The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from the Radicals Ruining Our Schools. It's available wherever you get your books. Corey, thanks for all your hard work on this, and really appreciate you coming on the program.
Thanks so much, Stu. Good to talk to you.
Well, a final bit of good news before I leave the wonderful Glenn Beck Ranch experience that I've been having over the past few days. I'll be back in Texas tomorrow doing radio, so you can join us then. But we have a new all-time high in Bitcoin. What an incredible run this has been. 113,170 as I'm sitting here right now. I don't know what it is at the exact moment you happen to be tuning in, but the point is, it's never been higher. And, you know, we were talking earlier about the Bitcoin faucet website that opened up in 2010. At the time, you could go in and put your Bitcoin address into a website and they would send you, no questions asked, 5 Bitcoin, just to kind of like, we want to get people to get some coins so they can play with them a little bit. 5 free Bitcoin. I think a time machine back to 2010 would be a very wise project for you to be working on.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil. Unser